Welcome to the Patriots Recap Podcast. It's time to take a look back at the Patriots Week 7 win over the New York Jets. I'm Alex Barth, joined for the recap every week by Matt Dolliff, both of us from 98.5, thesportshub.com. And Dolliff, before we jump in, I'm going to throw this disclaimer out there for everything we say, because it's going to be easier for me to do it off the top than to do it 100 different times during the next 30 or so minutes.
I know where this is going. What is it?
We get it. It's the Jets. We get it.
Yes.
Everything ITJ. Comes with a grain of salt, but it's ITJ. The Jets. ITJ.
Branded on the game, right? Branded on the film. ITJ.
But here,
the Jets. I get it. We know. So don't say it.
That being said, let me
start. Edit. Don't say it.
So one last time, just it's the Jets. But that all being said, that disclaimer put out there, and again, that disclaimer extends for the next 30 minutes. But that being put out there, let me start here. That is how a good football team beats the New York Jets, right? That was not like their week two win, which even though they won whatever it was, 25-6, 25-9, like that felt like a close game at times. This never felt close. They showed they are miles ahead of the New York Jets, which is pretty much what you ask for in a game like that.
Yeah, I think the whole it's the Jets crowd, the whole ITJ Incorporated out there, I think where they're getting this wrong is that they're still sort of comparing this year's Patriots to what they were when they had Tom Brady, and like that's over. This is a whole new era, and we have to judge them by how they're playing right now. And I get that because I've said that a lot about the coaching staff. You know, they don't look coached as well as they did when they had Tom Brady. So, I mean, that I think is sort of a little still relevant because Bill Belichick's still here. But I think what you have to understand is that the Patriots had to show this to us. They had to show us that they're capable of beating up on a far inferior team and prove that they're better coached. We're going to be better prepared. Our players are going to be more competitive. We're going to come out there with some fire. We're going to execute. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to do all those things. And you're not even going to have a chance, because we saw them had to come back from down multiple touchdowns to beat the Houston Texans, who were terrible. And they lost week one to the Miami Dolphins. And it looks like the Dolphins were a Damian Harris fumble away from being 0-6. So they lost to a bad team that day, and hindsight's 20/20. But still, the Dolphins haven't won a game since that week one upset over the Patriots. And that game's going to be sticking in my craw for a while, because I thought they'd be at least 4-3 after seven games. And so they came oh so close there. But yeah, the Patriots had to prove that they can take an inferior opponent and just spank them, slap them around for 60 minutes. And, you know, show that we are the far superior operation to this team. We're far closer to the teams that are actually contending than teams like the Jets. So they had to show that to us. And I think they did that for a full 60 minutes, basically, on Sunday.
And I think part of it, too, is like this game can be a springboard, right? I know I was on with Touch and Rich yesterday, and they were talking about, what do you make of them celebrating like crazy at the end of the game? Like, it's the Jets. And if they celebrated like that after a game like that, if they were like 4-2 or 5-1, I would almost take more issue with that, because at that point it's like, well, you've had actual wins. Like, why is this an accomplishment? But you know, in basketball terms, sometimes you just need to see one go in, even if it's a layup, even if it's a free throw. If you're having a rough stretch shooting, you just see one go in and it changes things. I think the Patriots just needed to see one go in. I think they needed to experience a win. The Jets happen to be the next team on the schedule, but I'm sure that's celebrating, right? Bill getting beers after the game and the Optum Club or whatever. You know, that was probably cathartic, that, you know, it felt like an exercising of the demons of sort, getting the monkey off the back. And now you look forward here to a crucial stretch where some good teams, but some beatable teams, right? Some opponents. You talked about the Jets, you know, the differentiator. Hey, we're this much better than the Jets. Okay. The Panthers are a team, I think, that some people, and they have some moving parts right now, but a team that some people may see on a similar level. The Chargers next week, I think without Baker Mayfield, you put the Browns in that conversation. So they needed to see it go in. They just needed, they needed a win. They needed to feel a win. They needed to experience a win. They got that certainly against the Jets. I don't fault them for kind of enjoying it. I think they needed to enjoy it. I think that that would be therapeutic here moving forwards. And yeah, ITJ, but this, you mentioned people comparing it to when Brady was here. That's how Tom Brady's Patriots beat the Jets. So you can't help but feel good about the overall outcome.
Yeah, I saw they compared the throw, the deep throw to Kendrick Bourne, to the exact same throw that Tom Brady made. So Mac Jones equals Tom Brady, I guess. But yeah, no, just to follow up on the whole celebration and all that. Yeah, they were 0-4 at home. So I mean, they needed
that too.
they needed to win at home. And like Matt Judon said it, we needed to win it. We just needed to win at home. I mean, let alone win a game yet. But yeah, like we needed to see that they could do that, but they also needed it for themselves. And I know that Bill said, we don't lack confidence or whatever he said in his team. But you know, it's not that they weren't confident, but it is just good to see that your execution is actually starting to bear some fruit. And they saw that over and over again, especially offensively in that game. But we still need to see certain things. Like we need to see them come up with big plays like that in a close game at the very end when it really matters, which they still haven't really proven that they're able to do. They've been able to prove that they can hang with talented teams and teams that are probably more talented than them. I'm not sure if the Chargers overall are more talented than them, but they are. The defense, especially the Patriots defense, is going up a really tough opponent on the Chargers offense. So I think it's particularly on the defensive side of the ball, we're going to need to see them prove that they can put together a game like that against a good opponent. And then when it comes down to crunch time and it comes down to the two or three plays that really decide the game, the plays need to start going their way because, yeah, they beat the Jets, but ITJ. So, you know, they're still only 3-4. And so they're going to have to keep proving that they can perform like that against, a really talented team and then actually come up with the plays at the end of those games, because I think it should be a close competitive game either way.
Yeah.
This weekend against the Chargers. Question is, are the plays going to start going their way at the end?
Well, the other thing kind of to your point where you talked about with the defense, where we need to see that kind of effort, you know, this was a big week for Josh McDaniels. I really enjoyed his game script. Maybe a little heavy on the trick plays there late in the game, but overall, like I thought
they didn't need that. They did not need that wildcat play. I don't know why they did that, but yeah, no, it was a good day for him overall. Right. Continue.
Anyway, overall, I thought it was a good script. I really did. And now can he do it again? Like my thing with Josh McDaniels has always been, it's been this for years, not just this year where everybody's jumping on this bandwagon of Josh McDaniels as a play caller is questionable. Josh McDaniels will give you a gem every like 10 or so games. And he'll give you like one or two games a year where you look at it and you're like, wow, if he called plays like that regularly with his design, this offense would be unstoppable. So the question is, was Sunday a Josh McDaniels diamond in the rough, or was it a sign of things to come? Because the designed plays to Jonnu Smith, spreading out the offense, I just thought they checked a number of boxes in that game. Play calling wise, again, play calling is somewhat independent of the opponent, right? Obviously, you're calling certain plays to take advantage of certain matchups, but philosophy is irregardless. Philosophy does not have to do with the opponent. Your philosophy is what it is. It can be whatever you want it to be, regardless of who you're facing. Can Josh McDaniels bring that same philosophy here moving forwards against other opponents?
Yeah, I think it's a sign of things to come in terms of the playbook and the plays they're running. They're starting to figure out what guys do well, what they don't do well. This is where I think the return of N'Keal Harry has helped, because he's been a really good blocker in the run game. I mean, he's using his size to his advantage somehow. And I mean, it was good to see N'Keal make a catch, even though it was garbage time for Brian Hoyer, but it's whatever. Nice, I mean, he's starting to make more contributions. They're starting to factor him in more. Hunter Henry's starting to make plays in the red zone every single week. Kendrick Bourne's getting better every week. And so, yeah, I think they're starting to figure out what they do well. And they're going to start, you know, they'll start building off of that. So it's definitely a sign of things to come for the offense. The thing with Josh is that he just tends to make a handful. I mean, even a handful might be too much, but you're talking like two or three play calls that are really curious. And like, we really only talk about them when they don't go their way. Like imagine that Kendrick Bourne pass just sailed through the end zone and it was a completely failed and they ended up scoring 3 points on that drive. I know like the rest of the game went pretty well for them, but I think the fact that they executed it, gives him a bit of a reprieve this week, so to speak. And like, but we go back to that like 3rd-and-1 handoff to Brandon Bolden, which that was against the Cowboys, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I think it's especially when they're down, you know, when they get down, he starts to really reach deep into the bag and then try some things that are almost too unorthodox. And like, I think that's really, and honestly, I think it's just a nitpick. You know, it's rare when you come out of a game and say Josh McDaniels' play calling cost the game. You know what I mean? I don't think that happens too often.
I guess a couple times this year.
You've said it a couple times this year.
Yeah.
What, like the Cowboys game?
I would say the Cowboys game. I would say the Saints game. I don't know if it's like individual play calling, but overall play sequencing, maybe more so.
Yeah, but I don't see it as like the Achilles heel of the team or something that they never overcome. I mean, you could say he's sort of hit or miss, I guess, in that regard. But yeah, I mean, he's always good for a couple play calls where you're like, why'd they do that? Even in the Jets game with like the other two trick plays that they really didn't need, especially the one where they started in the Wildcat and Mac Jones motioned back in. And he immediately just threw the ball away because they covered both the receivers down the field.
Right.
So, and that was a play where it's like, why, you know, and you do come out of a game sort of asking Josh McDaniels that question. But I think what we saw against the Jets is more of, you know, what they're capable of. And I think it's a sign that they're starting to really refine things. And, you know, I think they're going to get better execution wise. So I think the execution is probably going to get better, and that's probably going to make his play calling look better.
So one more on the offensive side of the ball that I think is independent of ITJ. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. The offensive line. We finally saw the offensive line alignment we've been waiting for basically since Trent Brown got hurt with Wynn, Karras, Andrews, Mason, Mike Onwenu over there at right tackle. And it was the best offensive line performance of the year. Now, it was the Jets, but the Jets' defensive line actually might be their best positional grouping. They do have some talent up there. John Franklin Myers, you know, watching him this week, I was really impressed. He just got a 5-year contract extension a couple weeks ago. And yeah, he left that game thinking like the third quarter, but he didn't really do anything before he got hurt. And he was a menace in week two. He was a big reason they struggled doing anything in week two. So I think to see that offensive line combination come out and dominate, will it be that perfect every week? No, probably not. But again, that's their best group. And I think the fact that it was their best offensive line play of the year so far has more to do with the grouping itself than the fact that they were playing the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, big win for anyone who's been calling for Michael Wynn to play right tackle for right. 6 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was Isaiah Wynn's best game of the year, I guess, that technically. Too. I mean, yeah. He's finally getting with the program, hopefully. I think that's been a huge factor on that line, because I don't think the interior has really been an issue all season, except maybe it was a little wonky when they had to play without Shaq Mason.
Yeah.
But I mean, Ted Karras has proven that he's a starting caliber lineman, I think. And so he's come in, he's played both guard spots, he's played them really well. And so that really hasn't been an issue. They might have had a little bit of an issue when they had to play James Ferentz for an entire game. But I mean, other than that, the interior has been fine. It's really been those tackle spots and, you know, maybe Onwenu, you know, locking in at right tackle moving forward can be a big help for them. I was saying a couple of weeks ago, you know, it looks like Justin Heron could be your guys. Then they take a step back. And so I guess maybe neither of those guys are really ready to be a starter. I think Kajust still has potential to be a starter long term, left or right tackle. But yeah, I think Onwenu is really like has been the key to them sort of settling down in the last couple of weeks. He's had a good year all year. But honestly, they tried to play him at guard this year. It's his natural position, I guess. But it looks like he's going to have to be a tackle moving forward, at least for this team. And so, you know, it's good that they're starting to settle down there, because that was supposed to be a strength of the team.
Yeah.
And, you know, finally they're starting to move in that direction, it looks like.
All right, defense. What are we going to do with this secondary, Dolph? Because Jonathan Jones is now out for the season. Devin McCourty is week to week. That to me means an IR stint. 3 weeks it sounds possible. There's holes to fill. They were short an outside corner coming into the season. They're now down their starting slot corner. I don't know that they have a true backup. And now they might be down their only deep safety. And they never really had a true second deep safety. They haven't had a true second deep safety since they traded to Ron Harmon 2 years ago. So you look at what they did against the Jets. Miles Bryant comes up and plays the slot. And Juwan Williams got more run on the outside, kind of mm-hmm. pooling with J.C. Jackson and Jalen Mills. But Miles Bryant's probably your second best deep safety. And they moved Adrian Phillips back there and Kyle Duggar back there at times in that game, but those guys are better in the box. So now you have, you know, either Duggar or Phillips playing out of position. You have Miles Bryant playing out of position, and this thing's starting to turn into a real house of cards. So now that, and look, it was in the middle of the game and they didn't have other resources, and you fill in for that game how you do. I'm not faulting them for putting Phillips or Duggar back there in that spot, but
right.
Going into a week when you're game planning here, I don't know if Miles Bryant's still the best option at slot corner. I think you have him at deep safety, and there's concerns there because the deep safety is the last line of defense and you want a strong tackler back there. And as much as I love Miles Bryant, I think he's been good. Tackling hasn't been his best trait through a year and a half here in the NFL. But, you know, I wonder, all right, they signed Sean Davis. They signed Elijah Benton to the practice squad. Those are both deep safeties. Do we see those guys? They've had D'Angelo Ross on the practice squad. He is a true slot corner. He's probably the only true slot corner, healthy true slot corner on the roster right now, as long as Sean Wade remains out. So this is, they worked out three slot corners too last week. So are they going to bring somebody in? Is Sean Wade healthy? Do we go D'Angelo Ross in the slot? I think on the back end, you start looking at moving Miles Bryant back there with those other options in the slot. And I think you have to consider potentially elevating one of those two guys from the practice squad. Anyway, that's a lot. Your thoughts.
I think it's still about the outside corner spot, honestly.
That's the one thing I forgot to mention. The other option you have is you move Jalen Mills into the slot. And then you put Juwan.
I didn't know he was a two-sport athlete.
There's so many names there. And that, because I just saw the dunk from last night scroll by on my Twitter feed. That was awesome, by the way. You move Jalen Mills into the slot and you play Juwan Williams regularly on the outside. And he did play well on Sunday, but ITJ. So anyway, there's all the options.
Right. I don't want to overreact to the Jets game. And I think it's still just the outside corner spot. Not to poop on your whole strategy with the slot corner, but I think the slot corner they'll figure out. I think Miles Bryant, I think, it does have more potential as a slot corner than maybe you'd seem to think. I think Jalen Mills could play a little bit in the slot if it's a bigger slot guy. Maybe we'll see him against Keenan Allen on the inside this week. And the guys you said they signed, what's Sean Davis' name? The other guy they signed.
Sean Davis, yeah, former Rob Gronkowski victim there in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
Benton,
right. Yeah, I'm not gonna diminish the loss of Jonathan Jones because he was making big plays leading up to that injury.
Right.
So he's a really good player, and he's probably just underrated because he's undersized and plays the slot, and he's not really as good on the outside. It's outside corner. I don't trust Juwan Williams to do what he did against the Jets. I know the Jets have pretty good receivers, but I'm not gonna trust Juwan Williams to play every week on the outside against some of these receivers, especially coming up. I mean, even this week against Mike Williams and guys like that on the Chargers.
Keenan Allen, yeah.
I mean, someone's going to have to cover him on the inside, it seems. But like Jalen Mills is still struggling. And like his tackling was an issue too. I know Miles Bryant had a couple of missed tackles. I wanted to go back and rewatch the drives where the Jets actually moved the ball and those two touchdown drives. Tackling was a big issue there, particularly in the secondary. I thought they were, again, pretty good up front. But, you know, they're just having trouble covering down the field. And part of it is they don't have the right personnel for it. And like, I think it would be nice if they could make it happen this week. It doesn't seem like it's going to happen next week. The trade deadline is not until next Tuesday, I believe. So, you know, they have time and they'll probably see if they can somehow get through one more game without disaster. And I mean, it's going to be against a really tough, explosive passing offense, but they got to get someone who can play on the outside, man. Like if they get someone legit, maybe a guy whose stock is down, like I haven't really done a ton of research into it, but a guy maybe had like a first round pedigree, someone like Aqib Talib back when they traded for him. First round pedigree, stock maybe a little down. He's athletic, he's big, he could play cover, particularly outside receivers. You bring a guy like that in who you could play regularly on the outside, and then I think all the dominoes could fall into place. Like, I know, like, Adrian Phillips probably isn't ideal as the deep safety. I mean, and part of that was probably just he was the emergency fill in back there. So maybe they try Bryant back there, maybe they even try Mills back there. But I think that's another thing that they can figure out. You should be able to figure out the deep safety position as long as the guy's, you know, reading the play correctly and not completely blowing his coverage, which, by the way, we saw McCourty do a couple times in the last couple weeks. And I'm not saying, you know, McCourty is no big loss either. But I just think the slot corner and the deep safety are things that they have personnel that they could probably figure out, for lack of a better phrase. I think outside corner is the spot where they're going to have to bring someone in. That's basically my take on it.
So it's funny you say that because I feel the best about outside corner in terms of the players that are on the field right now. I actually think J.C. Jackson, Jalen Mills, they're okay. Not great, but they're okay. Like if those two guys are out there, you have a shot. The depth scares the crap out of me because there really is nobody after those two guys. Whereas I feel like slot corner and safety, factoring in the injuries that we have now to Devin McCourty and John Jones, those spots, you're right, they do have depth, but who the hell are they going with? Because it feels pretty even across the board, and you don't know, and you don't want to be trying guys out mid-season. So that's, you know, that's where I'm at, where I'm actually kind of okay where they're at an outside corner right now, as long as they don't lose anybody.
Well, my whole thing is you get someone who can play on the outside, then you could kick Jalen Mills
then
inside.
Then you free up Jalen Mills.
You got another option on the inside where I think he's better suited and would probably play better if they put him there. That's really my whole idea.
Yeah, no, you're right. And that's kind of the choke point right now, is that the obvious answer is to move Jalen Mills, but you might create more problems than you solve if you do that. And, you know, just kind of what you mentioned, the kind of guys they could bring in, because they are up against the cap a little bit here too. They got like $4 million about, I think. A name that sort of fits what you described and people are into is Jason McCourty. You bring him back, the Dolphins suck, they don't need him. He doesn't make a ton of money right now. Well, he just went on IR. He got hurt last week.
Oh, damn it. You had me excited for a second. I was bring him back.
The other one you said, in terms of the first round pedigree, he might be more of a slot corner than an outside corner at this point in his career, but they did work out DJ Hayden, who was a first round pick back in 2013. Now, if you go on Getty Images and search DJ Hayden, it's just pages and pages of him getting burnt like toast. So I don't know where he's at, but you know, they did bring him in. He was a first round pick. So maybe
the
that's
former
the
Jaguars guy.
With the Jaguars recently, yeah, was drafted by the then Oakland Raiders. And he's been with the Jaguars and he spent a year with the Lions too. Actually, he spent a year with the Lions. When did Matt Patricia start with the Lions? 17 or 18?
18,
yeah, okay. So he wasn't there. He was with the Lions in 17. So there's no Matt Patricia connection there. But
Jesus Christ.
I would be really surprised if they don't, at the very least, promote Davis or Benton or Ross from the practice squad, if not just outright sign somebody, whether it's, you know, Hayden or any of these corners they worked out over the last week. But yeah, they are, you know, we talked about this a ton during camp, Matt, on and off the air, that the top end talent in the secondary was still what it had been for the last few years, but that tremendous depth that they had the Jason McCourty's, the Daron Harmon's, right, that had all evaporated, and that they really were on shaky ground in the secondary if and when injuries started piling up, and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, especially now that you know for a fact that Stephon Gilmore won't be back. I just think once they came to that realization that we're not going to have Stephon for this season at all, I think that's where they probably should have realized we got to go get someone. And I mean, maybe that's why they're trying out all these other defensive backs. I just don't know if they're trying out the right kind of players. And, you know, I'm not necessarily, like, I see what you mean, where if they just stick with J.C. Jackson and Jo'Wan Williams on the outside, and maybe Jalen Mills can cover slot guys or play deep safety, and they can figure that whole inside thing out with Mills as part of that mix. Like, I guess I wouldn't feel terrible about that if Jo'Wan Williams is going to keep playing the way he has. And, like, you know, physically, Jo'Wan Williams should be able to match up against guys on the outside. He's a big dude.
Right.
I just think the execution hasn't been there. It wasn't there against Houston, and he had a good week this past game against the Jets. And, you know, I don't think it's anything to sneeze at, because for whatever reason, Corey Davis looks like Randy Moss whenever he plays the Patriots. I don't know what the deal is with that. But Davis caught a touchdown against Mills, too. And so, yeah, I don't know. I just think that's where they got to look outside the organization when it comes to, you know, getting better at cornerback, as particularly on the outside.
You still feel as good about the defensive front as you did a couple weeks ago?
I forget how good I felt a couple weeks ago.
Well, like Matt Judon was rolling, and they brought back Jamie Collins. Not like to call you out on like you were too high. I'm just saying, you know, we checked in with the secondary, because I was going to say, yeah,
do a check-in, vibe check with the front
basically,
seven.
Basically, you still rolling with the front seven?
Yeah, they've really tightened up the run defense, which is good. That was a huge concern after a couple games. And so I think that has really been sewn up. I would like to see more overall speed. And I mean, I guess that's sort of a thing with the secondary too. And like, people have been pointing this out. They don't, what did you say?
It's the whole team.
The whole team. I mean, like, yeah, like they I don't know that they're slow. I just think they lack that high end speed. And I'm not usually a big speed guy. I'm more of a speed is overrated guy. But that doesn't mean you don't need speed. I just think, like, you don't draft a guy because he's the fastest guy in the draft. I think there's a whole lot more that goes into being a good player than just
this
being
isn't the Raiders.
Fast. Than just being fast. That's not the only factor. But you want guys that are fast. You don't want guys that can't close, and especially with the tackling thing, you want a guy to be able to to close on a guy and have, like, you know, especially with the speed that we have with all these receivers and these athletic tight ends these days, like, this is where the game has sort of evolved a little bit, where you do need really good speed and, like, all over your defense, particularly at like covers, linebacker spots, and in the secondary. It's because you have all these wicked fast guys catching screen passes, doing whatever down the, like, short passes, and then taking them for a big game because they're so fast, and you can't keep up with them because you don't have the speed to close on them and tackle. And I mean, maybe that's an issue because you know, Miles Bryant isn't the fastest guy in the world, really, right? Because, like, that's why he was undrafted. And so I don't know what they can do there, but I think the only solution right now is to maybe play Josh Uche a little more. Like, I don't know. Like, I get that if you don't feel good about him as like an edge setter, things like that. But that's a guy who was the fastest guy on the field throughout training camp, and he's been making plays whenever he's been out there. But they really, it seems like they're only, correct me if I'm wrong, seems like they're only playing him in, like, obvious pass rushing situations. And whereas you have Kyle Van Noy playing a lot of snaps out there, and he looks like he's slowed down a little bit. He's taken a step back, and, like, he had tackling problems yesterday. So there was a play where I think he was in the backfield, and the running back just slipped away from him. And I don't know if that's a speed thing, but I think maybe he's just not the same player. But yeah, like, they're playing well up front for the most part, and they've tightened up the run defense, which was important. But I'd like to see them get faster. I don't know how they could do that, if they could bring someone in at the trade deadline for that. But I think they should start. I want to see more of Josh Uche personally.
Well, I think they started doing it. I think, you know, playing Josh Uche more again is a good point. I think bringing in Jamie Collins, well, he's not your traditional burner. His athleticism.
Good point.
Like, to me, it's not about raw speed. It's just, you know, Dont'a Hightower, Juwan Bentley, even if you want to go Giovanni Talai, right? These are north-south linebackers. These are run downhill, hit the hole linebackers. They weren't necessarily an east-west team at that second level, but I think Jamie Collins gives you a ton of east-west ability. Josh Uche can give you some east-west ability. And I think, too, the other guy, and look, I don't know what the hell his injury situation is, but especially now with Harvey Longhi potentially being hurt, Terrez Hall was a guy who could certainly play sideline to sideline when we saw him last year. And he's still on PUP. And I don't know if he's ready to come back or not, but if he is, he's somebody I think if they consider bringing back could give them some depth linebacker snaps, absolutely, and does give you, again, some of that east-west ability. So not quite outside the organization, but not directly on the roster either. I'm still waiting. I love Terrez Hall. I've always been a big Terrez Hall guy.
Yeah, I like him too.
I really hope we get to see him at some point this year. Real quick here, we got like 2 minutes left. Quick thought on the Chargers.
I think people are going to focus too much on Justin Herbert, Mike Williams, and Keenan Allen.
I mean, Bill thinks he's the second, like, Bill thinks he's the greatest thing since sliced bread.
I think he's really good. he's sort of, you know, proven that he's no fluke after that rookie year. You know, I'm a big, let's see you do it for more than 1 year guy. And,
right,
I think his, Herbert's talent is for real. I just don't know how many wins is that going to translate to? You know, they're doing well right now. Can he do that for a whole season? Are they going to win the division? Are they going to get a bye? Are they going to go on a playoff run? Like, that is the next question for Herbert, because I think obviously his arm is for real and he's been very productive. Mike Williams having a breakout year. Keenan Allen's been great for a long time. And Austin Eckler's a really good running back. They're going to get him back, I believe. I don't know if he was hurt, but it's an explosive offense, obviously. But I think people are going to focus too much on that and not on, you know, the rest of the team. I think their defense could possibly be beatable. I think Mac Jones could have himself a solid day, as long as, you know, Joey Bosa doesn't wreck it for him out there. So I think they're beatable in that regard. And I think Bill could be able to dial something up to confuse Justin Herbert. He's still only in his second year. And so maybe he dials up some plays where Justin Herbert gets rid of the ball and it's, you know, it's to the wrong spot. There's a guy who's in the right spot at the right time and picks him off. I think that's why I think it's going to be a closer competitive game than people think. Question is, it comes down to 2 minutes left in the game and it's a 3-point game or whatever. Can the defense step up and make a big play against Herbert at that point? And can Mac Jones do the same? And I think Mac Jones has proven that he's capable of doing that late in the game. So I guess the question really, which is unbelievable considering he's the rookie starting quarterback, right, and you got all these veterans on defense. Can the defense step up and make a play at the end of the game when Justin Herbert has the ball and they're threatening and there's guys making plays up and down the field? Can they stop that big play from happening when it really counts? That's a big question they still have to answer. And I think that if they could do that against the Chargers, go a long way toward answering that. But if it doesn't result in a win, hard to feel good.
The one other thing I'd add to all that, remember last year, Patriots whooped the Chargers special teams unit. I mean, yeah, it was
absolutely
just
destroyed them.
A beat down like you read about. So
I want to say, haven't they had some miscues on special teams this year too? They haven't really cleaned that up.
Yeah,
yet, have they?
Yeah. So Patriots special teams could play a big role in this game. All right. We will have you covered up to and throughout the week, you know, leading up to the game. I'll have the preview podcast on Thursday. Matt will have his notebook this week. First availability tomorrow. All the same good stuff we've had all year. 98.5 thesportshub.com. For Matt Dolph, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.